Welcome to AUSA's Army Matters podcast. This is Family Voices with Patty Barron. It is my honor to have as our guest today Air Force Lieutenant Colonel Ruth Brenner. Dr. Brenner is a board-certified preventive medicine physician. She serves as the Defense Health Agency Deputy Chief of the Immunization Healthcare Division. She received her Bachelor of Arts and Bachelor of Science at the University of Washington, her medical doctorate at the Uniformed Services University of the Health Services, her master's in public health at the Bloomberg School of Public Health, Johns Hopkins University, and she did her preventive medicine residency at Johns Hopkins University. Very impressive, Dr. Brenner. Ms. Ann Morris is a board-certified family nurse practitioner who joined the Defense Health Agency Immunization Healthcare Division staff in March of 2004. She is the DHA IHD provider at the North Atlantic Hub Satellite Office at Naval Medical Center, Portsmouth. She graduated from Old Dominion University with her Bachelor of Science, working over 20 years in Level 1 trauma prior to obtaining her Master's in Science with Family Nurse Practitioner degree in 2002 at Quinnipiac University. Dr. Brenner and Ms. Morse represent the Defense Health Agency Immunization Healthcare Division, formerly known as Military Vaccine Agency Vaccine Healthcare Center Networks. Welcome to the Army Matters podcast, Dr. Brenner and Ms. Morse.
Thank you so much for having us. You know, August is National Immunization Awareness Month, so we're really excited for the opportunity to talk about the importance of immunizations, especially this month and during a pandemic.
Today's topic, immunizations, is very timely given the times that we live in. Why is it important for military families to keep their immunizations up to date during the COVID-19 pandemic?
It's important because we want to keep our military families and communities safe from vaccine-preventable diseases. That's our goal, rain or shine, day in and day out, pandemic or no pandemic. Routine vaccination is one of the many tools we have to prevent illness. Illness leads to increased medical visits and hospitalizations. We want to prevent illness, and at this time during a pandemic, we want to keep people out of the hospital more than ever before. We recommend families follow their local guidance, whether it's stay at home, continued social distancing, or shelter in place orders. Keeping our families safe and healthy keeps the military strong and keeps us mission ready.
Dr. Brenner, I received this question quite a bit, actually, and it's about the need to immunize our children before schools reopen in the fall. So will my child need immunizations even if schools don't reopen in the fall?
That's a great question. It is one we are also receiving frequently, and it is absolutely important for children to receive immunizations. I've heard of schools opening in person, virtual only, a hybrid of those two models, alternating days, half days. There are so many school options out there. Regardless of your child's level of in-person attendance at school, or even if your child is in a homeschool setting, we do recommend that they stay current on their immunizations. Usually we promote a quote back to school immunization program because many schools require immunizations or annual exams, sports physicals, and such for athletic programs. This year, we probably should rebrand the effort since many children are not going back to school in the traditional sense. It is important for parents to remember that the academic setting is not the only place where children can come in contact with viruses and bacteria that can cause them to get sick. The playground, the grocery store, sports programs, neighborhood pool, these are all examples of exposure locations. Additionally, children need to be protected against vaccine-preventable diseases all year round. Well-child visits typically include age-specific health measures and other preventive services. Vaccinations are one of those preventive services, and they are essential services as part of these routine visits. Children who are not protected by vaccines may be more likely to get diseases like measles and whooping cough. The CDC has a nice publication on their website, cdc.gov/vaccines, that can help guide parents on which vaccines are needed during this outbreak.
That's really great information, Dr. Brenner. But I imagine it's also a little bit scary to think about taking your child in for a medical office well-child visit. Is it safe to do so?
That's a good question. And I realize parents are trying to limit their child's exposures, period. So asking whether it's safe to go to the doctor is a great question. If your child's due for a well visit, you can just call the doctor's office and ask what measures they're taking to safely offer visits during a pandemic. Many doctor's offices, this is both inside the military health system and our civilian partners, they are taking extra steps to ensure that well visits happen safely during the pandemic. Some examples I've heard of are clinics that schedule sick visits and well visits during different times of the day with facility cleaning between the two so that sick children and healthy children don't share the same space or pass by each other in the office. Some doctors are asking patients to remain outside and until it's time for their appointment. This reduces the number of people in the waiting room. Most clinics are limiting and monitoring entry and exit points and installing barriers to limit physical contact among patients. In many places, those entry and exits are now through different doors so that patients don't pass each other face to face. This is another effort to reduce exposures. Some clinics are geographically separating the sick children and the healthy children. So this could mean different hallways on the same floor. This could be different floors of a facility, could be different buildings. And while some of these seem like drastic measures, this really does underscore the importance of seeing sick children and healthy children and following guidelines for safety during this unprecedented world event. I will say that at a very minimum, clinics are screening patients for COVID-19 symptoms before and during visits. They are ensuring physical distancing, that means 6 feet apart when possible, and requiring cloth face masks for everyone over the age of 2. They're also ensuring adherence to respiratory hygiene, cough etiquette, and hand hygiene. They are routinely cleaning surfaces as well.
Are there other ways to get back to school immunizations if you don't want to bring your child in for a medical office visit?
Yes. So what we just talked about was a traditional visit, such as an annual well child exam. The military health system has a unique infrastructure that's different than our civilian counterparts. In many locations, we have standalone immunization clinics where parents can bring their children in for immunizations without ever going to the pediatrician. In some locations, you can just call the pediatrician or their nurse, ask what immunizations your child might be due for, rather than coming into the clinic in person. They'll let you know if your child needs to be seen, perhaps even a virtual visit instead of an in-person visit, or maybe no visit at all, and they just send you straight to the immunization clinic. There are alternatives to the standing immunization clinic as well. So some of our facilities have opened drive-through immunization clinics in the parking lot, and those have been used successfully both under conditions like we have now and also without a pandemic. So we've used that for flu drives and other opportunities. My recommendation is really that families check with their providers to learn about the immunization availability nearby and precautions that are being taken to protect you and your family. The DHA-IHD, our organization, has a health.mil page available where you can find information. There's a paper we've posted. It's titled Recommendations for Mass Immunization Events During Pandemic Conditions. And this may be a helpful resource for parents.
Thank you, Dr. Brenner. Ms. Morse, why don't we bring you into the conversation and ask you, is the DHA involved with helping to develop a vaccine for COVID?
Well, as you're aware, there are multiple agencies across the globe that are working to develop a vaccine for the COVID virus at this time. The Department of Defense has partnered with the CDC, the FDA, National Institute of Health, and many other agencies in support of what's been called Operation Warp Speed. Operation Warp Speed's goal is to provide a vaccine to 300 million individuals by January of 2021 through what's called the Investigational Review Board approved COVID-19 Candidate Vaccine Phase 3 Clinical Trial. I know that's a mouthful. But volunteers will be selected based on the study protocol and inclusion criteria being distributed. The Defense Health Agency is not independently developing a vaccine. However, the Immunization Healthcare Division staff and members are actively participating in a variety of working groups with all the leading government agencies I listed above and others to assist in the COVID response, the phase three studies that will be going on, and if requested, to provide expertise on diagnostic, therapeutic, and vaccine development.
You know, I think we've all learned so much about science over the last 4 or 5 months, about viruses, about how you can contaminate one another, so many different things. And one of the questions that I think might come up with our audience is, won't COVID-19 precautions also protect against vaccine-preventable diseases?
Not necessarily. COVID-19 precautions such as social distancing, wearing the face mask, frequent hand washing will and can assist in decreasing the incidence and some of the spread of some vaccine-preventable diseases, such as a flu virus. But it's not a guarantee that it'll protect them against them. Children and adults can still become infected. Individuals who have health issues, such as respiratory disease, autoimmune disorders, cancers, and other health problems, may be more susceptible to a viral or bacterial infection. Therefore, we need to protect them by what's called herd immunity. I'll explain that one in a moment. The CDC's Advisory Committee on Immunization Practice has established guidelines for routine vaccinations for both adults and children, along with their catch-up vaccine schedules, and how and when to vaccinate those who are immunocompromised. One of the best ways to protect your child, yourself, or your family from a vaccine-preventable disease is to get vaccinated. And you can incorporate standard COVID precautions, such as the mask, hand washing, social distance, etc. Let's say you're either behind on your vaccinations, or you, your child, or a loved one are unable to be vaccinated because you or they are too young, you happen to be pregnant, or you have an immunocompromising disease or take a medication that makes you immunocompromised. For the best protection during a disease outbreak, those around you or your family need to be vaccinated to decrease the risk of exposure. That's what I meant by herd immunity. Herd immunity is the term that we use when a high percentage of the community is immune to a disease through either a vaccination or a prior exposure to that illness, making the spread of that disease from person to person unlikely. A good example of this would be like with last year's measles outbreak. We needed to protect newborn babies, especially if it's yours, with the MMR vaccine. I can't give a newborn baby an MMR vaccine, so you and the others need to be vaccinated to protect your baby. Same concerns goes with pertussis, or what we call whooping cough. Newborns or the very young can't receive their vaccinations until they're old enough. So we give mom a Tdap vaccine while pregnant, so that allows the whooping cough antibodies that she makes to be transferred to the baby when it's born. And others around the newborn, like dad, grandparents, need to make sure theirs is up to date. And that's done every 10 years to be up to date. Remember, vaccines activate the immune system by exposing you to a specific antigen, thereby your body can create the antibodies. 10% of us, our immune systems will result in developing fevers, body aches, site reactions, and other normal expected side effects that we've seen here frequently at the Immunization Healthcare Division. These reactions are not contraindications to further vaccination. So it's important for everyone to keep up to date on their vaccinations and continue the COVID precautions.
Oh, I absolutely agree. Vaccinations are so incredibly important. And I tell you, I get my flu shot every single year for exactly that reason. But I think some people are still going to be a little bit worried if their kids should still get immunized if they have been infected with COVID-19. Should they?
Well, as we just discussed, and as you stated, keeping up with routine vaccinations is really very, very important. However, current recommendations are to hold routine vaccinations in any individual that has a suspected or a confirmed COVID-19, regardless of the symptoms being shown, until they meet the criteria to discontinue an isolation. Most recommendations are that mild illness is not a contraindication to a vaccine. Vaccinations visit for those individuals with COVID or suspected COVID should be postponed to avoid exposing healthcare providers and other patients to the COVID virus, and more importantly, to avoid exposing you to other viruses that could make you sicker. So if you or your children have a COVID disease itself, the vaccines can be resumed after COVID symptoms have resolved. If there was an exposure, vaccines can be resumed after you've completed your 14-day self-quarantine. Your healthcare providers can assist you if you have any questions.
That's a great explanation. What we're trying to do is, one, protect others from getting COVID, possibly with you exposing them, or you being exposed to another illness that could actually aggravate your symptoms if you did have COVID. So that makes perfect sense. But Dr. Brenner, why is it important for the flu vaccines to be given during COVID-19 pandemic?
So for this upcoming flu season, flu vaccination is going to be very important because it's going to help reduce the overall impact of respiratory diseases on the population and lessen the burden on the healthcare system. The flu vaccine can also provide individual health benefits, including keeping you from getting sick from the flu and reducing severity of the illness if you do get the flu, plus reducing your risk of a flu-associated hospitalization. Let me run through some of the recommendations for the flu vaccine. It's recommended for all people ages 6 months and older. It's particularly important for essential workers. These are pharmacy staff, healthcare personnel, other critical infrastructure workforce members. In addition, people at higher risk for severe illness from COVID-19 infection, those are adults ages 65 and older, nursing home or long-term care facility residents, persons with underlying health conditions, which we previously mentioned, and certain racial and ethnic minority groups. Additionally, people at high risk for influenza complications, and those would be infants, young children, pregnant women, adults over the age of 65, and those with underlying health conditions. Both flu and COVID-19 are respiratory illnesses, and every effort to eliminate one, or at least decrease its severity, will help us get through this upcoming flu season.
Dr. Brenner, I got the flu back in 2010. It was horrid, and I have never skipped getting my flu vaccine since then. It really does help. Will the flu vaccine protect me against COVID-19, though?
Unfortunately, no. Receiving the flu vaccine will not protect against COVID-19, but a flu vaccine has other important benefits, like we mentioned. Flu vaccines have been shown to reduce the risk of illness, hospitalization, and death from influenza infection. Getting the flu vaccine this season is more important than ever, not only to reduce your risk of flu, but also to help conserve potentially scarce healthcare resources. The influenza vaccine will only provide protection against the influenza virus or lessen the severity of the symptoms if you are infected. It will not protect you against COVID-19.
Okay, well, let's get down to the brass tacks. When will the flu shot be available at my MTF, and do I need to go to the MTF to get my flu shot?
So we'll receive about half of the annual Department of Defense influenza vaccine order in early October. Most of that will go to locations where alternative access is not available. For example, our overseas locations, you mentioned your family overseas, so they will be part of that first round vaccine availability. Also, ships afloat, those are folks who obviously can't get to your local MTF or clinic for vaccination. And no, you don't need to go to your military treatment facility to get your flu shot. While many beneficiaries choose to participate in flu drives at their MTF and other vaccination events, influenza vaccination is a covered TRICARE benefit. The TRICARE.mil website has information on no-cost options and copay options for our beneficiaries.
Terrific. And where can I call or who can I contact if I or someone has questions or concerns on immunizations? And can healthcare providers, staff, or beneficiaries call? So you know how it is with soldiers and service members. They don't always have time, but can others call for you?
The Defense Health Agency's Immunization Healthcare Division has a worldwide support center line at 877-438-8222. You select option one, and anyone can call that number, whether you're a provider, staff member, such as the RNs or the corpsmen or along that line. The patient can call, their spouses, any beneficiary. We work with any service, so you don't have to be active duty. You can be a vet, you can be a reservist, you can be a retiree. We answer 100% of the calls 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, whether you're here in the United States or you're overseas. So we'll answer anywhere. We have licensed healthcare providers on call at all times, our RNs and nurse practitioners. And if they can't answer the question, then we have access to one of our physicians who can help answer any parent's question, the patient, or the provider's inquiries. And we can do it with the patient and the provider there in the office at the same time. The only time we don't answer a call right away is if we happen to be on another line with another caller. Then we'll write down that number and we'll call you right back once we're cleared from the prior call. I do want to point out that this is a different line from the TRICARE Ask a Nurse line. As one of the providers for this 24/7 support line call, I've answered a multitude of questions on concerns from a variety of topics for all vaccinations. And they can be anything from what's a normal side effect, can I get a vaccine or not because I had a reaction or I think I'm allergic to it. I've had providers call asking for assistance on the treatment of certain vaccines, such as with the smallpox and with heart issues, cardiac issues. We've had people call with large red sore arms after a site reaction, which can be perfectly normal. We have policy schedule questions. What I really enjoy is helping guide those nervous parents in the middle of the night when they call because their little ones got their 2-, 4-, 6-month-old vaccines or even their 1-year-old. And now they have a fever and they've forgotten how much Tylenol or Motrin to give. And they just need that guidance to say, hey, are you listening to me? Am I doing this right? And we can just really give that parent the support they need that they're doing everything correct for their kids. We'll even call them back the next day to make sure everything is okay. If you don't want to call, but you want to email us a question, we do have an email at dodvaccines@mail.mil, or you can find us on our website at www.health.mil/vaccines. And again, the support center line is 877-438-8222 and select option 1, and any provider will be happy to answer any question anybody has at any time of the day.
I would say that this is probably one of the most important podcasts that we've done because every bit of information that you have provided us is important and it applies to all of us, really. And I'm just so grateful that you were able to be on with us. We've covered so much information, and unfortunately, we are running out of time. But as we conclude our podcast today, do you have any final remarks for our listeners, Dr. Brenner?
We truly appreciate every opportunity we're given to reach out to our military family, and we really want to stress the importance of staying healthy and safe in this unprecedented time. Hopefully, your Association of the United States Army listeners have found this information helpful. Again, we stand by to answer your questions over the phone, email, or on social media.
Thank you so much, Dr. Brenner and Ms. Morse. You've been just amazing guests, and we can't thank you enough.
To all our listeners, thanks for joining us. Be sure to subscribe to the Army Matters podcast on iTunes and everywhere podcasts are found. Join us next Monday with a brand new episode of Army Matters with Army Real Talk. The Army Matters podcast series is brought to you by the Association of the United States Army, the U.S. Army's professional association, member-supported, Army-connected. Visit us at AUSA.org for more information or to become a member. Your membership helps AUSA continue to carry out its mission to educate, inform, and connect with the total Army, our industry partners, and our supporters of a strong national defense. For questions or to provide topic recommendations, email us at podcast@AUSA.org. Have a great Army Day. Hooah.